Are you looking for ways to attract and retain private pay clients? Thrizer is a payment platform for therapists built to help clients automatically tap into their out-of-network benefits and save on therapy up front. Check out our special link, join.thrizer.com/modern therapist, and use the code modernTherapists to activate $2,500 in free payments with Thrizer.
Therapy Notes, the number one trusted EHR among mental health professionals, just keeps getting better and better. With legendary customer support 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, they're giving you all the tools you need to succeed, whether you're a solo clinician or a group practice. Try them free for 2 months using promo code MODERN today.
You're listening to the Modern Therapist Survival Guide, where therapists live, breathe, and practice as human beings. To support you as a whole person and a therapist, here are your hosts, Kurt Widhelm and Katie Vernoy.
Welcome back, Modern Therapists. This is the Modern Therapist Survival Guide. I'm Kurt Widhelm with Katie Vernoy, and this is the podcast for therapists about the things that we do in our practice, the ways that we go about being professionals, balancing out business with the work that we do. And follow up to last week's episode where we had a wonderful interview with Carla Titus. We'll link to that in our show notes over at mtsgpodcast.com. And we wanted to expand on some ideas. We've had some time to kind of sit with some of the things that Carla talked about, and we wanted to kind of talk a little bit more in depth about one of the points that she brought up as far as return on investment. And being able to look at that, we've had plenty of people over the course of our show's history come in and talk about, you should look at your money and don't be scared of looking at your money. And we agree with all of that.
Absolutely.
We wanted to maybe bring this particular part of the conversation a little bit more in depth and a little bit more to life as far as some of the ways that we have experienced this across our practices, some of the ways that we continue to do this, and just add to the conversation. So part of how this conversation kind of came about is, do we just look at return on investment as far as dollars put in to dollars coming out of it? And Katie and I have largely decided the answer to that is no. So, Katie, you have taken a lot of our ideas and many of your own ideas that formed our conversation earlier, but you have the list of the things that we talked about. You've got lots of different ideas as far as it's not just dollars in, dollars out.
Sure. I think the big piece that I want to start with, just as a follow on from Carla's episode, though, and if you haven't listened, I would recommend, you don't need to listen to it before you listen to this episode, but it really has a lot of good points. But we do need to pay attention to the ROI of dollars in versus dollars out, because most of us, maybe not all of us, but most of us need to make a living at being a therapist. And so we do need to pay attention to that, but it isn't the only thing that's important. And I think it's too simple a metric, right? If I make a certain amount of money and I'm not spending too much of it, I'm okay. And in truth, I don't think that's accurate. I think there are other pieces to this that are important to consider, but you have to start with the money. And I think a lot of therapists don't. I have a blog post that I wrote a bazillion years ago. I'll link to it in the show notes, that talks about how do you decide what to do and when. And we'll probably talk a little bit about it as well. But some of that speaks to decision-making based on these other types of ROI as well. Okay, so now to your question, Kurt. The ROI points, the return on investment, not release of information forms, but return on investment that I saw that we talked about. Obviously, the first one is money. The second one is time. And I think that's where the first part, I think, that people get wrong. We've talked about this before. I'll link to some of the other business episodes in our show notes, but some people will privilege money over time, and they really shouldn't. And so sometimes you do need to invest in things that will make your life easier so that you have more time, even if it's going to cost you more money than you'd like to spend. And there's ways to figure that out, but that's potentially beyond this conversation.
So yeah, we have talked about kind of that time invested into things before. I also remember a really good discussion on this in our Facebook group, the Modern Therapist group, where the question was kind of like, how do you value your time? Like, you know, if you have a client cancel, how do you value what you're doing during that time? So I think that there's a couple of different ways of even looking at that one, as far as like, I'm imagining, at least when I'm hearing you say this the first time, I'm imagining, okay, there's the time that I'm saving by putting in this fancy system, or there's the time that it takes for me to go out to a networking event and, oh, that was a waste of time because I didn't make any connections there. So there's a lot of different ways to evaluate this. And I don't know that I have like a, all right, my fee is X number of dollars per hour, and that's how much I'm worth, whether I'm driving to my office or I'm sitting at a networking event, because I don't get paid for those hours.
Sure.
So I encourage you to listen to all of the episodes in our back catalog that we'll link to as it pertains to some of these different ideas for you to get more in depth on this. But there's a lot of different ways of looking at time.
Yeah, I think the side note to time is also energy. And I think that we've talked about in systems of self-care and other types of things where there might be different things you should be doing, you know, that you're going to get a higher ROI on a creative activity in the morning versus maybe doing your billing in the afternoon because you have more creativity to spare, or your energy of going to all these networking events. If you're an extrovert, it might be very high ROI, and your energy's on, you know, is expanding exponentially. Whereas with an introvert, you have to be very clear on other ROI points, because going to a networking event is going to be draining, for example. And so all of these things are very individual. And so you have to determine, what am I getting out of doing this thing? And is it worth it to me? And so you had said a couple of things, and why don't we go to networking as the next type of activity that typically has ROI, and that's connections. A lot of people go to networking with the idea, I'm going to get clients. And if I don't get clients and I don't make money from them, then that's a waste. And that is one assessment. But the other thing is, what are those connections worth to you? And what is the other part of the experience that benefits you? So it could be continuing education. It could be learning who you are as a professional. I know you had talked about when you first started networking that you didn't say no to anybody or anything and learned a lot from that. So maybe you can talk about that, because I think we vary in that. But networking has a lot of different elements of ROI, connections, potentially clients, other opportunities, stuff like that.
There's a lot of nuance to what I'm going to say, and I don't know that this applies to all parts of everyone's path or everyone's career, but I think in being able to reflect on this, and I'm thankful that you're going on this journey with me here as I'm kind of reflecting back on things. When I first launched my practice, I kind of took the stance of like, I'm not going to say no to networking things. I'm not going to say no to opportunities to go and speak. I'm not going to say no to, you know, anything that's the potential to be able to build my network, build potential referral sources. Some of the things that I learned was how to better figure out which ones were actually paying off as far as referrals to my practice, as far as which ones were building my professional network. I had heard all the way through grad school to go to networking events. That's how you build your practice. And now that we're in this part of our career, I've even repeated that to students and supervisees and that kind of stuff before. But as of today, what my advice is changing to is, go to networking events to make friends. Go to networking events to be friends with the people who will refer to you, because we tend to refer to our friends, especially, you know, if we're in places where it's a lot of private practice kinds of things. Go make friends with the people at the networking events. If you go to get referrals, you will not make friends. You will be seen as like trying to win capitalism against other people that are also trying to build their practices and get the same kinds of clients that are there. But what you're talking about here in this category is kind of the relationships that you develop. And those are the ones that across time are the people that text me and are like, hey, you available for lunch today? When are you available, you know, some night after work? How's your kids doing in, you know, whatever event that they're participating in? Those are a lot of people that I have developed relationships with over the years that also happen to be the ones that send me the most referrals. And so kind of piecing a lot of this together is I had made some of those mistakes early in my career by not saying no. And I learned how to grow into, okay, I'm better at sensing, okay, this is one where it's just like, all right, very transactional. Here's business cards. And I might think of these people for a particular skill set or a particular referral kind of thing. But in general, I found that people largely refer to their friends and they want their friends' practices to grow. So, kind of with the wisdom of where I'm at, it's, I would still go out and meet with people, but I would meet with people in ways that are like, hey, I enjoy you as a person, not necessarily like your practice and my practice match up well, and we should, you know, have a business handshake and do a business transaction here.
So there's kind of different stages of that, right? So there's the visibility, the connections, and people who might refer to you. So that's still that kind of ROI of money, potentially, or client caseload or whatever. But you're also talking about, I think, enjoyment or real relationships, because especially in private practice, it can be very isolating. But even in, you know, community mental health, if you're not trying to walk down the hall or connect with somebody else, if you don't have that social support network, I think that's also very challenging to do this work. And so you're talking about kind of the ROI of social support. Mm-hmm. I want to add to what you're saying, because I approach some of this stuff differently. And part of it's because I've had a conference or a podcast or other types of things I've done in the world for very many years. And so I also go to some of these networking events to find business collaborations. And so those types of connections, I think, are potentially lucrative. There's potentially opportunities to do stuff you wouldn't do on your own. I mean, I met you at a networking event and we had this whole endeavor that has been created. But when I think about whether it's podcast sponsors or sponsors for a charity event that I'm doing, or even jumping into different types of work, I've been asked to consult on projects. I've been asked to come in as an expert, you know, to help move a startup forward, you know, those types of things. Those types of connections are another type of ROI that potentially in the end have the money or the visibility or the, you know, the marketing, which we'll go into in a minute. But those connections are also important. The other thing that I think can happen, because like you, I said no to very few people when I first started out. I was networking. I had the time. So I used my time. I leveraged it to meet with a bazillion people. There was times when I literally met with like five or six people just back to back in a Starbucks. And I was exhausted at the end of the day. So I learned what not to do. But I know so many people, and my memory is such that when somebody says, oh, I need a referral for X, I know someone. And so I have a lot of people come to me as the mental health provider in their life who can refer them to anybody. And so then I get all of the joy of referring to people I know and I know their work. And they think of me because I give them so many referrals. And so then it becomes referral partners in that way. So you know, I think, what is the phrase? It's like your net worth is in your network. I think I actually have experienced that through so much networking. But I did do an assessment at one point of my different networking activities, because I had my professional association meetings. And I also did some just straight ahead networking. I joined a networking group. BNI was what it is, if people know what that is. And it's Business Networking International. And so it was just people of all different professions, and it was a paid group to be in. There was gamification of doing networking activities, so going and learning how to network and going and networking one-on-one with people and that kind of stuff. And so I looked at those two different things. I was networking with my quote-unquote competition, and I was networking in a group where I was the therapist or I was the coach, and there were all these other folks with other professions. And I looked at the actual clients I received. I looked at the money that I got. And I, you know, there was also the soft assessment of which group I enjoyed being with more. And my professional association won all of those things. And so I think you actually want to do an assessment, because just because you're making friends, if you're not making friends with folks that are situated where they might refer to you, because I made friends in my other networking group, but they just didn't refer anybody to me. I kept the friendships, but I moved my work time into more dedication to professional association.
Thrizer is a payment platform designed for out-of-network therapy. As a therapist, you would use Thrizer to charge clients for sessions and collect your full rate upfront. From the client's perspective, Thrizer links to their health plan, so insurance claims are automatically submitted for them upon every charge. From there, Thrizer manages the claims end-to-end so that your clients don't have to worry about manually submitting super bills or getting on calls with insurance. The best part? Thrizer allows clients to only pay their co-insurance portion for sessions, while Thrizer covers the rest of your fee and waits for reimbursement on their behalf.
They also offer you an instant benefits calculator for free, allowing you to provide upfront transparency to prospective clients on their out-of-network coverage. Therapists only pay a standard 3% credit card processing fee per session with no additional fees. Visit join.thrizer.com/modern therapist to get started and use our promo code Modern Therapists to receive $2,500 in waived fees for your sessions.
I like your addition, and I think in reflection, I probably did kind of some of the same things. I tried out one of those. I don't think it was BNI, but it was a group similar to that. And
sure,
through kind of my experience, I was like, I don't feel like this one's going to work out in the way that the professional organizations did. And I think I'm just going to be at risk of reiterating all of the points that you've already made.
But I realized that I said one thing, and so I don't want to discount what I got from the networking group, BNI. I actually learned how to network from BNI. And I think that's another ROI point too, is the education you receive. Because a lot of professional association meetings, you get your CEs, but there's also learning who you are as a professional. You know, all those meetings that we sat with people that we were, you know, we didn't say no to, we had to learn about how we talked about ourselves, what would land, what would not. I think out loud, as is obvious, mostly to probably all of our listeners from how I talk on the podcast. But I think there's that element of being able to, in real time, figure out who your ideal client is and who you are and how you want to show up as a professional that happens in these networking meetings, if you can get comfortable. So the next one, which is really related to what we just talked about, is marketing and visibility. And I think we started with the relationships, which I think where people should go, but just kind of the marketing lesson is that people need probably at least 8 touch points, if not more than that, to think about you and refer to you. And so going to a networking event, handing out cards and leaving is not marketing. I guess it is marketing. It's not making relationships, and it's not marketing sufficiently. And so looking at the ROI on marketing is really, am I getting clients? Which that may be an assessment you have to do 8, 10, 12 touch points beyond the first thing. And so to me, I think making sure that you're actually measuring your marketing activities at the point where you should be getting an ROI, I think is really important.
I know that I've mentioned on the podcast before about sometimes like I'll have done a presentation and then like 4 years later, someone will be like, my sister heard you speak on this and referred me to you. So do you have any suggestions as far as like how long afterwards you should measure? Like, was that worth it?
Well, I think it's all the different types of ROI. I mean, giving that talk, probably initially there was some sort of ROI as far as visibility in the community. It probably had some immediate client referrals, or at least, you know, kind of initial inquiries that maybe didn't pan out for another 6 months or a year. And there probably was a certain level of enjoyment. You like to speak, you like to put together talks. And so there was ROI that happened at that moment. I think tracking, like, hey, somebody followed up with me 4 years later, that just is a data point. I don't think you wait to assess whether or not an activity is valuable for 4 years. I think you probably want to look at it over time. And I think more about assessing those ROI points in categories. And so I have speaking, and sometimes speaking by itself, you just get money for it. But sometimes it's the visibility, it's the opportunities, it's the number of clients, that kind of stuff. And then I have networking events and different networking groups and try to put that out there. And then there might be other pieces. So working on cases with somebody, right? And that's another type of relationship. And I'll look at kind of who am I getting clients from? Who, what relationship should I nurture on business time versus what relationships are personal? And so to me, it's like if you had a speaking category, that four-year-old referral basically would go in the same category as the referral that you got from the speaking engagement 2 weeks ago.
And I know that a lot of where we're talking about this tends to focus on those who are running practices or in private practice kind of things. Yeah. But in addition to this, this is still that traditional, here's how you get jobs. Like, here's...
Oh, sure.
Where people who might be in hiring positions, I know that I've benefited from this as far as some of the teaching positions that I've had in the past. But if you aren't, you know, in a private practice track or going into that part of the mental health industry, this is also where being able to connect with people who might be hiring in different agencies or hiring for promotion kinds of things, all of this stuff still rings true for you.
Oh, sure. I think the more relationships you have, the more people you have in your corner, either looking for clients for you or looking for opportunities to promote you, to mentor you. I mean, people, I did this, I'm sure you've done that. People who've sought out mentorship with me, I'm more likely to help them along their path than people who just come to me looking for a job or looking for a piece of advice. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's connections, relationships, those types of things should always, I think, be part of how you operate. And connecting in whatever way is good for you. I mean, we have a lot of folks who have built their practices on social media connections, right? Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't have to be that person-to-person, you know, looking in people's eyes thing. It can be written communication. I have a colleague who we send emails to each other, and every once in a while we'll get together for coffee, right? Like there's different ways to nurture these relationships. So I really want to be clear on that. But I think having relationships is how you're going to get the highest ROI for any of the areas: enjoyment, social support, referrals, and by result of that, money. Another area, and this is one I think you could probably speak better to, is the ROI on education. Because I think we have a lot of folks in our profession who potentially seek out additional competencies or reassurance or those types of things. So when you think about ROI on education or the ROI of education, because that is an endpoint, what thoughts do you have about that?
I have multiple thoughts, and they may even be contradictory. And so I think that...
So many thoughts.
So many thoughts.
My thoughts warring in your brain.
But I think ultimately my point and our point in this episode is you have to look at what's most valuable for you. We have talked before about you don't need another certification.
Yes.
This has, you know, there are lots of people that I see in our profession who also say you don't need another certification. I have seen lots of people over the last few years who are like, I have to get trained in EMDR. I'm being left behind in the therapy world because everybody else is getting trained in EMDR. And I provide consultations to people to fulfill their requirements for EMDR. And then I see people stop practicing EMDR and they just go back to how they were training in the first place. And I think that that leads to, you know, in particular to some of the resentment about, you know, the whole EMDR process. But it's not a good return on investment where you're just chasing keeping up with the Joneses kinds of things. I practice EMDR. I have found a tremendous, not only monetary value, but clinical value in being able to go to these skills over and over again. And I think that this applies in a lot of different parts of education. Is it's looking at, why do I really need this training? Is this something that I'm going to be doing? Is this return on investment merely filling the checkbox for my licensing board and I'm never going to use it? Then invest in that appropriately. But when it comes to actually getting some of the education stuff, some of this also comes down to some of the softer wisdom skills that you were describing earlier, as far as, how am I now better at being able to communicate what I do? How do I show up at some of these networking events that's not the formal education piece, but more of the human growth sort of piece that comes along with being able to put myself out there over and over again? It's great when there's learning objectives as far as, did I learn these kinds of things? But part of all of the, you know, wonderful like review of, am I actually doing things? You know, feedback-informed treatment we've talked about before, but do you ever do feedback-informed, was this good return on investment? Did I show up well? What worked for me here? And I think that over the course of time, these are skills that I had learned kind of growing up through some different organizations that I was in that put me into networking much earlier than I think a lot of other people do. But even some of the softer skills, I learned in these kinds of environments, this is kind of the format. This is what ends up getting people to respond to things. Shout out to our colleague Ben Caldwell has talked about, like, when he first started going to board meetings, that one of the things that he learned early on is there's kind of a flow that needs to follow, you know, the professional organizations kind of speak first to things and then the general members be able to speak up next. And that's how people end up getting heard. And he's made a tremendous career out of being able to go and adopt and refine himself to be able to speak more clearly to legislative boards and regulatory boards and that kind of stuff. So there are softer skills education things, but it takes actually reviewing, what did I learn? What was successful as far as how I came across, not just what did I do while I was there? Not only does Therapy Notes combine billing, scheduling, notes, secure messaging, group telehealth, and more into one streamlined platform, they're also always adding new features and forms to their library. So no matter your specialty, Therapy Notes has you covered.
Learn more at therapynotes.com and use promo code MODERN for 2 months free. Wow, I have so many responses. So I want to start with the education one, and then I want to kind of go into more mission, vision, that kind of stuff, because I think that's where Ben's story pops in again. But I think for education, all of what you said, and we just had an episode recently on burnout versus boredom, and one of the pieces of that can also be doing educational things that revitalize your work. And I actually am finding that now. I feel like I feel pretty comfortable with how I work as a therapist, but I continue to take CEs. I enjoy them. I you know, have to for our license, all that stuff. But the trainings I'm starting to do now are just ones that seem interesting, that seem that they'll add something to how I'm looking at a case or just revitalize what I'm doing. I'm currently taking a somatic training with Linda Tai that's amazing. I'll link to it in the show notes. She has them every once in a while. And I'm, you know, shout out if anybody knows Linda Tai, we want her on the podcast. But I'm finding that just getting into that space and taking in some new knowledge is refreshing. I think for earlier career folks, it's the reassurance. It's the let me get more competent because I feel incompetent, and that's imposter syndrome.
I'm comparing my 1 year of practice to people who've been doing this for 20 plus years, and I feel behind.
Sure. But I think that education in and of itself can be very powerful, and it can have the side benefits of learning how things operate, like what you were talking about, and making some of those relationships and connections. I think the other thing, when you were referring to Ben and how he learned to show up in these board meetings for, you know, the licensing board meetings, and I'm assuming maybe other board meetings as well, professional association meetings as well, that he was coming from a place of mission. And so to me, there are times when I choose to do something and it may have some of these other ancillary pieces. I might get a few clients. I might get some really cool relationships. I might have enjoyment. But the reason I choose to do it is based on some sort of moral or mission kind of principle. I'm doing it to support the profession. I mean, that's part of why we do this podcast, right? I mean, we do it for other reasons, but part of it is we want to give back to our profession and to help and support people. And so it's an assessment I have both to choose an activity, but it's also an assessment I do to not choose an activity. We have like why you shouldn't sell it to BetterHelp and other episodes that kind of speak to that as well. But I think there's that element of getting clear on why you're doing what you're doing and the morals and values that go with it can also help determine, is it worth it for me to do this effort, even if it's a high financial return on investment or whatever? It could be a very dissonant thing to do, and it might be a negative return on investment for your morals and values.
I'm hearing a lot of the pieces of a number of episodes that we've talked about in the past kind of being brought together here, and being able to look at this from kind of a whole perspective, I think, is why we ended up having this as an episode that brings together a lot of things that we've been talking about for years. That, yeah. You know, I think in our prep for this episode, I'd use the term legacy as being kind of one of our reasons for continuing to put out the podcast, not necessarily from like an ego sort of place of like, hey, we need to have the final say on everything. If that's where you want to hear us, then go ahead and hear us that way. But I think it was really to have a resource out there for a lot of people to have kind of a values and perspective kinds of things. And if you share them with us, then we've got a whole back catalog of things that are available on a number of different topics.
Yeah.
And that was really kind of part of our legacy as far as supporting other clinicians in a way that was not just kind of the one-on-one, if you happened to see us for coffee sort of thing, but being available in that way, kind of on demand.
Yeah.
But, you know, really being able to kind of take that deeper thinking and be able to be like, here's what my mission is. Here's what return on investment means for me. And I think a lot of the examples that we've talked about through this episode are what matters to me might not matter to you. There have been things that I have spent time and money on in the past that seem completely out of whack for every therapist business coach out there, but those pieces had meaning for me. And then it might be a lot longer timeline sort of thing. Like you and I became involved with the CAMFT boards, you know, several years ago, and being very much at a building point in my practice and my career, financially, it did not make sense to spend as much time doing CAMFT work as I did, but yeah. It fulfilled some of that mission stuff for myself, and eventually it paid off as far as visibility and speaking engagements and those kinds of things that I think that it made my process make sense. And it wasn't something that I formally sat down and was like, here's step A, now volunteer for camp, now profit. It was really a lot more of being able to look at multiple ways that ROI can show up.
Yeah. So I want to do a quick summary because we're getting close to time, because I think that we've been a little all over the place, a little bit more thinking out loud in this episode. And you can tell I'm I'm the impetus for this one because I like to think out loud. But what we really have come down to is that the money is the most common ROI that people talk about. And it's especially when you need to make money, that can feel like the most important return on investment that you have to get to survive. And so I don't want to downplay it, but there's also time and energy. There's also the emotional ROI. Am I having fun? Am I enjoying it? Am I serving my mission and purpose? Am I getting something that feeds my soul, to be a little bit woo about it? Then there can be competence. Am I learning something from this process? Am I getting an education about myself or about what I do? Am I getting reassurance? Am I getting a social support network around me, or am I getting another certification for a training? Like, what, you know, am I getting that as part of my ROI? Am I making connections? You know, am I building my network? Am I building visibility and having more of these organic marketing activities? Or am I just having straight ahead marketing? And is the ROI there? Am I building a legacy, whether it's, you know, kind of an altruistic legacy or a legacy based on I'm going to die at some point, and I want people to remember me and have something of me to go with that. I think these ROI points are not all inclusive. I'm sure there's other reasons why we do the things that we do and that are valuable. There's other returns on investment, but I think that they are dynamic. They change over time. Sometimes you really need to worry about getting your money, and sometimes you really want to build your network because you're feeling isolated. So I'll put the blog that I started with because we didn't get to it, but it has some ideas on how you assess ROI and what kind of what order of things might be helpful in deciding what to do when. And it, if folks want it, you know, we can potentially do another episode on what do you do when, you know, reach out to us, email us, put it in the social media, but I'll definitely put that blog post in the show notes. But I think understanding that there are a lot of different things we can get out of what we do and that we need to assess that and make sure we're getting something out of it, that it's not just, I feel like I should do it or it's expected of me because of X, Y, and Z, but that I'm actually getting something valuable from the tasks that I'm doing for my business. I think that is, I'm hoping, what the takeaway is from today.
You can find our show notes over at mtsgpodcast.com. We'll link to Katie's blog as well as a bunch of our old episodes over there. Follow us on our social media. Join our Facebook group, the Modern Therapist Group, to continue on the conversation. And until next time, I'm Kurt Whithelm with Katie Bernoy. Remember to check out Thrizer. They are passionate about making out-of-network therapy work for everyone. Clients save upfront on therapy while therapists earn their full rate. Get started in minutes on join.thrizer.com/modern therapist and use the promo code Modern Therapists and receive $2,500 in waived fees for your sessions.
Thanks so much to our partner, Therapy Notes, the highest rated practice management solution for behavioral health. Don't forget, using promo code MODERN gets you 2 free months.
Thank you for listening to the Modern Therapist Survival Guide. Learn more about who we are and what we do at mtsgpodcast.com. You can also join us on Facebook and Twitter. And please don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any of our episodes.